Welcome, everyone. My name is Stephanie. I'm a compulsive eater and a food addict and the virtual services trustee for Overeaters Anonymous. And my partner in this workshop is?
Hi, I'm Ronnie. I'm a compulsive overeater, and I'm calling from Tucson. I chair Region 3 at the moment.
Welcome, everyone, to the importance of working the 12-step workshop. Please help me open the meeting with the serenity prayer. God, grant me the serenity, to accept the things I cannot change. The courage to change the things I can. And the wisdom to know the difference. Thanks, everyone. We're really glad you're here. Today, we introduce a series of workshops and discuss the nature of our disease and step zero. We'll be referring to the book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the big book, and Overeaters Anonymous, third edition. There'll be time at the end of the workshop for sharing it. At the end of this workshop, anyway, we'll be providing a few questions for journaling, if you like, to prepare you for working steps. Our workshop is being recorded and will be posted on the OA website podcast page, as well as other podcast feeds like iTunes. If you speak, it's considered implied consent to have your voice and your share recorded and posted. To preserve your anonymity, please use only your first name or a fictitious name when you share. Just as a reminder, we are self-supporting for our own contributions, even though this is a virtual workshop. Please use special workshop meeting number 82278 when you make your contribution. What you want to do is go to www.oa.org, this is our OA website, and click on contributions. Thank you so much for helping us carry the message. Before we get started with this workshop, what I'd like to do is tell you a little bit about how it came about. You may recall in the fall of 2012, the region chairs did a survey called A Searching and Fearless Membership Inventory, which was presented later that next year at the World Service Business Conference. It was discovered in that survey that 25% of the members who answered the survey had not completed all 12 steps. The Board of Trustees and the region chairs took this to heart. These virtual workshops are created as a part of the strategic plan for 2015. The strategic plan for 2015 is to increase the focus on the importance of working all 12 steps. Region chairs, region trustees, the virtual service trustee, and general service trustees, along with other members of the fellowship, will share their experience, strength, and hope, and how they work the steps and the importance of working all the steps in these workshops. Each month, we're going to focus on a different step. You can expect that during these workshops, you may get some suggested readings or possibly writings from time to time. If you can, it's really helpful if you can attend all these 12 workshops in person. The reason for that is the impact is so much greater when you get to actually be there and participate. It's sort of like whether you're at a live concert or you're listening to a CD of it. It's just a whole different experience. But if that's impossible for you, these sessions will be recorded, and they should be put up within a few weeks, maybe a little longer than that, on the OA website as podcast. With that kind of behind us, we're going to go ahead and get started, and Ronnie's going to start us off. Would you go ahead, Ronnie?
Sure. I'm going to share briefly my story. I came into OA in October of 99. I was weighing well over 200 pounds, and I think that the difference between me and Stephanie in our stories is that I was more miserable than heavy, and she was heavier than she was miserable. So that's how, you know, our stories differ a little bit. I moved to the U.S. in 98 from Europe. I did not have a work permit, but my husband was working and I had money. So what I did is work on step zero. I was binging every day. And every day I said that the diet starts tomorrow. And I really did believe that. The self-loathing, the self-hate that I experienced in those years were really the culmination of years and years of binging, putting myself down, striving to underachieve so that people won't expect me to do anything good, because then it's more pressure. So if you just don't notice me, it's going to be easier for me and for you. At the same time, I was the most important person alive. So I had that addict dichotomy that I'm a piece of nothing, and at the same time, you have to do everything, you know, that I ask you to do, or if I don't ask it, you have to read my mind, because you should be able to know what I'm thinking, and I don't really need to verbalize my thoughts. You just need to know what to do, because it's me. I came to OA, I started my abstinence in California. I wasn't working, and I made OA my job. I went to 2 meetings a day for about 2 years. I mean, OA was the most important thing in my life. I gave service within 3 months of going into program. I started working at in a group, and that I didn't want to do these things. I did it because my sponsor told me to. I didn't argue, and I think I was in enough pain to do all the stupid, silly things that I had no doubt were not going to help me, that my sponsor asked me to do. I have since lived in Boston. I lived in Flagstaff, and I went to meetings in the Middle East and in Europe. For those of us who think that OAs, you know, that we're protected in a shell, I did go to 2 meetings a day. I did not work when I first got into program. Today I work. I go to school full time. I have 3 children, and I go to meetings and I abstain and I give service. So for me, the excuse of I'm too busy would never work. I think that the more hectic my life is outside of program, the more I need to center myself in program, to give service, to make outreach calls, to be open, because for me, this is a contrary action. It's not what I would do naturally. It's not what I want to do, and I don't feel comfortable doing it. I would much prefer now sitting in the living room with my kids, watch a movie. But I need to give service, because for the same reason I had root canal last week. I didn't want it. I didn't enjoy it. But I knew that in the long term, it's probably the wise thing to do. And that's why I'm here today, and I'm grateful. And I think I'll turn back to Steph.
Hi there, Ronnie. Yes, I'll tell a little bit about my story. I'm someone that grew up as a fat kid my whole life. And in the early 80s, I was introduced to Overeaters Anonymous as a solution. And when I went, I didn't like it much. I didn't like the God part. I didn't like the steps part. But they gave me a plan of eating that seemed to work to take the weight off. I'm quite sure that I never worked the steps. You know, I went because it was a matter of convenience. I worked in a hospital, and the kind of work I did, I needed a lab coat to go over my uniform in my town. They didn't have lab coats that were that size, and I'd have to drive to Indianapolis to get one. So it was like, well, okay, maybe I'll do it. I didn't feel at all desperate. I thought I was a perfectly lovely, wonderful, large woman, and that if they could just get me to a size where I could wear a normal lab coat, that's really all the help I needed. And that's really all I did. And after a period of time when I dieted down, and it really was just a diet, I mean, the people were lovely. And the reason I came back was because they were friendly to me. But I didn't see any problems with my life, or I wasn't unhappy in my life except that I was fat. I thought that being thin would solve all my problems. And I was so much in denial because I hadn't worked the steps that when I got thin, I thought everything was hunky-dory. And after a period of time, we moved from Indiana to Florida, and I couldn't find a job, and I altered my food plan a little bit. I was pretty true to the diet that I had, the food plan that I had, which eliminated sugar and refined carbohydrates. And when I picked up the sugar, it was like I fell off a cliff. In a period of a year, I gained over 100 pounds, and I was desperate. I was really at a low place. I could only imagine you getting fatter and things getting worse. You know, it was beginning to impact me physically. I had trouble walking. I had trouble finding clothes. I had trouble doing my job. It was just pretty miserable. So what I did was what seemed reasonable to me. I pulled out that magical food plan and tried to stay on it, and I couldn't stick on it for more than a couple of hours. You know, I'd start out with what was my reasonable breakfast and wouldn't make it to work without stopping at one of those shops along the way. But I had remembered that it had worked, and I kept thinking, well, maybe if I go, it'll get back, it'll work. Berlin, and I was desperate enough that I got a sponsor. And, you know, one of the things that I'm going to talk about later in the Overeaters Anonymous 3 is the disease of the body, where we talk about compliance or submission versus surrender. I was submitted. I was willing to be compliant, to do what my sponsor said, but I hadn't really surrendered. I was still the gatekeeper. I was still the one that wanted to be in charge. So I did what I was asked to do. I lost, I don't know, 120 pounds, 125 pounds, got to a normal weight. Everything was great, I thought. Not during that time, I did have a sponsor that helped me work the steps, and we used the tools on a pretty regular basis. I did regular writing. I participated in service at my meeting. You know, I did things like that. But I was still in charge. You know, I hadn't really given up. There came a time after about 4 years of absence where I had a real bad automobile accident. My dad died, and I got convinced that my higher power was mad at me, didn't like me, and I was pretty mad at him. I continued to stay in OA, and it took me about a year to get abstinent again. And it seeded that thought that I could handle it, that I could manage it, that if I tried hard enough, which is something I'd been taught in childhood, if I tried hard enough, I could make it happen. And so over the next probably 14 or 15 years, I continued to have periodic relapses. It wasn't the falling off the cliff kind of relapses. It would be a bag or a box. And what happened is over those next few years, I gained about 35 pounds. And in my sick mind, I could rationalize that, hey, I lost 125 pounds. What's the big deal about 35 pounds? But I didn't like the way I was looking, and I was having to start to buy larger clothes. So I picked up bulimia. You know, there's a part in the big book where it talks about pitiful, incomprehensible demoralization. And whenever I read that, I think about those times where I had my head hanging in the toilet bowl, puking up whatever I just eaten, telling God, I'll never do this again. Just let me puke up the rest of this that I just ate, and I will never do this again. And then an hour later, being back in the bathroom doing the same thing. You know, a head full of OA certainly kills that. That crazy eating, you know, and I knew that something needed to change. So I began to talk to people. I was very secretive about stuff. I began to talk to people, and I got directed to a gal that was helpful to me. She was a real directive, sort of kick-ass sponsor who was, don't eat no matter what. No matter what, you don't eat. And her approach was, you put down the food, which is sort of my understanding of step zero. I needed to put the plug in the jug. Because when I'm eating, my brain is so crazy, I can't see the truth from the false. I can't see it. So she helped me put the food down. She had me work the tools every day until I could begin to get clear-headed enough and stay absent so that I could begin to work the steps. Currently, after these 28 years in OA, I have 10 and a half years of back-to-back absence, which I'm really grateful for. But for me, the beginning was putting down the food. Because for me, when I was in the food, I didn't know there was anything wrong with me. Like I said earlier, I just thought I was a perfectly lovely fat lady. And when I put the food down, it just all came back to me full force. All the, maybe not all, but a lot of the things that were problems. So I'm really grateful that I felt that pitiful and comprehensible demoralization. And with that, I'll pass it back to Lonnie, who I think is going to talk a little bit about the Alcoholics Anonymous
people. Hi, I'm Ronnie. So when we started talking about these workshops, the steps are the most important thing in my life, I think. And I thought that maybe to explain why is it so important for me to work the steps was to try and explain what was my step zero. What was it that made me willing? And I first came to program, I was introduced to the Big Book before I was introduced to the OA literature. That was 14, 15 years ago, and I think that the OA literature is great and it's unique in that I don't need to translate alcohol to food and alcoholic to compulsive overeater. The storybooks I definitely identify with much more than the AA Big Book stories. But I think that the most important part for me in the Big Book is the doctor's opinion. And when I first read the doctor's opinion, I hope to never forget the relief that I felt, because for me, I, you know, like somebody once said, I was a functioning member of society. I could tie my own shoelaces. I could dress myself, but I could not put down the fork. And I thought that I was really stupid because of that, because many good-intentioned people, you know, would just say, eat less or skip a meal. And in my head, I'm thinking, don't you think that if I could have, I would have? Don't you think that if I had the ability to stop eating and eat like you do, I wouldn't do that? Do you think that it's pleasant to walk around weighing over 200 pounds? I had two surgeries on my ankles. I have back problems until today. And again, good-intentioned people are not addicts. Not to say that addicts are not good-intentioned people. But it took me to come into the room of people who ate from the trash like I have, who stole food like I have, who stole money to buy food like I have, who have scars on their hands when they try to cut into frozen foods like I do. And this is when I met my people. This is when I felt the relief. And my sponsor told me to read the doctor's opinion. And I think that's an invaluable piece of literature to both OA, definitely for AA, but for me as a compulsive overeater, the doctor's opinion explains to me why diets don't work. And for me, this is the essence of step zero. Step zero for me is, you know how when we get into program, we talk about acceptance from the big book and we read the acceptance prayer. Step zero is about lack of acceptance, is about what is it that is unacceptable to me in life now that I will go to any length to change. The big book mentions in two places that we agree to go to any lengths to recover and for victory over alcohol. That's in page 78 and 79 in the big book, in the chapter Into Action. And any length to me means not what I'm comfortable to do, what I'm comfortable doing, but what is it like, you know, in Stephanie's story, I will do whatever you tell me, and I will suspend my disbelief. I will not think that it's not going to work. I will not argue saying why it won't work, because if I truly surrendered, I would be willing to do whatever it takes and go to any lengths to stop this horrible killing disease. What I understood from the doctor's opinion was that I have a twofold disease. I have an obsession of the mind, which, you know, in lay terms says I'm crazy. And I have an allergy of the body. And another word for allergy is an abnormal reaction. So I don't have to break out in hives when I eat certain foods. My reaction, however, is not like the normal person's. And my reaction is, I can't stop eating. This is my abnormal reaction to food. And because I have those two things, that makes me an addict. On the one hand, I cannot choose when to start binging. It's not under my control. And when I do start binging, I can't choose when to stop, because that's not under my control either. And for me, that explained for the first time what the difference between me and my sister was. She is allergic to peaches and to a million other things. But the difference between me and her is that after she doesn't eat peaches for 30 days, she doesn't go, oh, you know, I can eat peaches for 30 days. I think I can eat peaches now. And she doesn't come home and say, oh, my boss was such an a-hole. I'm going to have peaches because that's going to make me feel better. She doesn't have the obsessive mind. She only has the allergy of the body. If I only had either the obsessive mind or the allergy of the body, but not both, I wouldn't have been an addict, because my mind wouldn't keep telling me, come on, you can just want, you know, last time, yeah, you know, you ate too much, but this time it's going to be different. I guarantee you it's going to be different this time. Or if my mind tells me not to eat, but I do ingest whatever it is that I have the abnormal reaction to, then my abnormal reaction is triggered, and I can't stop eating. And it's those two magical components that make me the addict that I am, and I am grateful to understand that, because I think that 90% of my self-hate was released that day when I read the doctor's opinion. It's very important for me to realize that it doesn't matter why I binged. It doesn't matter what caused it. I'm an addict, and this is what we do. I binge to solve my problems. And I needed to understand that when I binge, I take everything food gives me. So, yes, it gives me great taste. It gives me some kind of euphoria, but that doesn't last. The other thing that food gives me that I cannot not take, that I can't refuse, is the overweight, the health problems, the self-hate, the snapping at other people. My tongue was so sharp that to this day, sometimes when I call my sponsor in the morning and I talk to her almost every day, some days my commitment for that day is just to restrain my tongue, because today I know how hurtful my disease can make me. And it's really tricky, you know. It's hard to have a disease that tells me that I don't have a disease. And that's what my obsessive mind does. Most of us graduated from high school. I assume that at least all of us went to school for a few grades, if not more. Some of us went to university. Why would I not trust my brain that got me so far in society? I can drive a vehicle. I can fix things. I can solve puzzles. Why wouldn't I trust my brain when it tells me I don't have a disease, when it tells me this time is going to be different? And this is where my higher power comes in. This is where I'm totally powerless. I'm not even trying to control it. I am not trying to solve it. For me, the relief came when I absolutely stopped fighting. If I need to try and control my portions, then I have a problem with that, whatever food it is that I'm eating. And I'm not talking about vegetables. I weigh and measure 3 meals a day, and I have for years now. But if I go to a restaurant and there's whatever there that is not on my food plan, and I feel, oh, you know, I'm just going to have 10, or I'm just going to have 2, or I'm just going to have 30, that is probably the type of food that should not be on my food plan. And I actually took a look. I talked to Stephanie earlier today, and we checked the definition of surrender versus compliance. And I found definitions that I really like. The definition of surrender that really talked to me was to agree to stop fighting, hiding, or resisting because you know that you will not win or succeed. And that's a definition of surrender that I found in the dictionary. Compliance, on the other hand, is the act or process of doing what you have been asked or ordered to do. So for me, this is the difference between following my food plan, doing the step because somebody told me, or knowing in my heart of hearts that this is what I need to do. And I have this objective person in my life, my sponsor, who guides me, who I have to trust 100%, you know. And I can't hide things from her because it will hurt me. In order to recover, I need to reveal my weakness. And I'm not saying put an ad in the newspaper, you know. I'm just saying one person, this one sponsor, who I don't necessarily want what she has, but I know for sure I don't want what I have. And I think that's step zero for me, to realize what I have, I do not want, and I'm willing to go to any length to do it. If you give me flyers and tell me to walk down the street naked and hand out OA flyers, I would do that, because it will solve my self-hate, my low self-esteem, It will make me a functioning member of society. And I think that, you know, it's important to suspend disbelief in step zero, to stop criticizing. We are such good criticizer. I can criticize everything. And I need to stop that in order to recover. And my disease is so strong that sometimes it will convince me that I'm better than that. I'm smarter than that. I'm not weighing 400 pounds yet. I'm not as bad as they are. But I need to let that go. I need to trust in OA as a higher power, in my sponsor as a higher power, in a cloud. I don't care. As long as it's something outside myself, I believe that my channel will be cleared, starting to clean with step one and following the rest of the steps, so that I can channel what I've been given. Because I think that only us who binged, who hated ourselves, over-exercised, under-ate, over-ate, whatever it is that I do compulsively, I have that gift that I can talk to you and you will know that your story is mine. It won't come from a doctor. It won't come from my best friend because they're not addicts. They don't know what it's like to dig food out of the trash. They just don't know. They just don't know what it's like to have, I just have to have it. I have to have it right now or else. And I know what it's like. I think that only people who, like us, got probably a PhD in step zero, you know, we can transmit that to others. And that way, you know, our recovery will be attractive to others. We won't have to sell OA. It's not a diet club. But when you look in my eyes and you see my serenity, it all goes to OA. OA has credit for my three healthy kids, for my home, for my dog, for my school. I credit everything to OA. And I'm grateful, and I'll turn it over to Steph.
Thank you, Ronnie. Hi, everybody. I was thinking about what Ronnie was saying. I came in 86, and for me as well, my introduction to recovery through the steps was through the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I too love the doctor's opinion. One of the really exciting things for me was to discover in the Overeaters Anonymous book that there were several appendices that talked about a disease of the body, disease of the mind, disease of the spirit. Our newest, what they call it, OA3, Overeaters Anonymous, third edition, has two new pieces added to it. The first one is a foreword by a gentleman by the name of Marty Lerner, who's a clinical psychologist, and much like Dr. Silkworth, he worked in the field, and one of the things he talks about is that the measure of the problem is not what we see on the scale, but the consequences of our physical, emotional, and spiritual disease. And he identifies it as a disease as well. I think that we are just coming to realize that for many of us, this may be an addictive disease. He describes it that way. And there's a new appendices added by a dietitian that also describes it as addiction. For me, what that does is it helps me relate more closely to alcoholism. He describes in his definition, he says, addiction is characterized by an inability to consistently abstain, impaired in behavioral control, craving, diminished recognition of significant problems with others' behaviors and interpersonal relationships, and a dysfunctional emotional response. Wow, I surely qualified for that. But I didn't know it until the food was down. As Ronnie said, my experience was that I needed to put the food down before I could see that I had any problems, because I didn't, like some alcoholics, I had not lost my house. I hadn't lost my marriage. I had a job. I made money. I'd been to school. You know, by a lot of ways that people click off success, I was successful. And I didn't really think I was unhappy except for the food. I was one of those people that thought, if only I wasn't fat, I'd be fine. If only my parents hadn't done that, I'd be fine. And one of the things that in the OA3 say is that this is an addiction, and that it's really important for us to identify the foods and parts of the food to which we are sensitive, our trigger, our binge foods, our alcoholic foods. For me, it was really important to do that, to put it down. So For me, I came in because I was fat and I didn't want to be fat. When I came to Overeaters Anonymous, I wasn't looking for an emotional solution because I didn't have an emotional problem. I wasn't looking for a spiritual solution because I didn't think I had a spiritual problem. You know, I'm grateful today that I was guided to put the food down so I could see the truth. And I one of the reasons that I really love OA literature is that it's written by compulsive eaters for compulsive overeaters. I don't have to do any of the translation and stuff. It's interesting because a lot of the stuff in the appendices and this new forward describe very much the same kinds of things that are in the doctor's opinion, except in OA terms. I think that the analysis is very similar. Our disease is progressive, and that's one of the things that's identified there. I'm just going to read this one statement that the dietitian Teresa Wright wrote. She said, "I believe that people can be addicted to food, and it's important for them to identify and remove from their lives the foods and food elements to which they are sensitive. They are called trigger or binge foods. They give people cravings, obsessions, or the inability to stop. Any food can be appropriate in an abstinent food plan, but if a food causes problems for the person, it needs to be removed. Then the food addict is free to use the 12 steps to create the life he or she really wants to live." When I read that, it was like, wow, that made a lot of sense to me based on my experience. I was really grateful that we've added those bits of information to the OA3. It really makes sense to me. As Ronnie was talking about, we discussed that part about submission and surrender, or compliance and surrender. That's in the appendices C now, and I think it's appendices C in OA3 and appendices B in OA2. It talks about differentiation between the two things. And I thought I'd surrendered. You know, it was suggested to me that in step one I needed to give up, and I thought I'd given up. You know, I was doing what I was asked to do. I didn't really realize that I was a gatekeeper. I think that my multiple relapses really showed me that I was still in charge. I tend to be a people pleaser, and so wanting to please my sponsor, I did what she asked me to do. And being a pretty accomplished liar, I was able to do that sometimes the same way that I did with my parents. If I wanted my parents to think that I was a good girl, I just told them what they wanted to hear, whether I did that or not. And sometimes I did that with my sponsor. And one of the things I learned through my relapses was that what I was doing wasn't working. I did read the books. I did do writing. I did go to workshops. I did do the steps, I thought. There was one instance that, to me, is really telling. The don't eat no matter what sponsor that I was telling you about. There was a time where she made a suggestion to me that I give up a certain beverage. And I really didn't think I had a problem with it. I had all this rationalization, and I could tell you up one side and down another that I didn't have a problem with it. And pass a lie detector test because I absolutely positively believed it. But I had this rule with my sponsor that if she told me something I didn't want to hear, I'd take it to quiet time for 3 days before I approached her about it, which is a really good rule for me. So anyway, after the third day, I realized that it really didn't matter whether I believed it or not, that was part of my spiritual practice, was to practice that surrender. And that has been a really meaningful thing to me, to practice surrender. You know, I don't have to understand why I need to do it. I just have to do it. If I see that it works in others, that reminds me of a little bit that was in the forward by Marty Lerner. He said that it was hope by example, and that's the way it worked for me. I know my weight, my size, my uncomfortability about how I looked got me into OA, and then I saw people that this worked for. You know, I'm so grateful, though, that Roseanne has taught us, keep coming back no matter what. Just keep coming back until the miracle happens. You know, I saw people that this worked for. People were kind to me. People helped me. People supported me. And that's what I needed, because my mind is very strong-willed, and it's just important for me to just give up and take direction. It's not what I like to do, as Ronnie had said earlier, but it's what works for me. I'm really grateful that we have these appendices, because in the part about the disease of the mind, it talks about how our disease is physical and emotional. In other words, I can't just go to my doctor if I have this allergy and he can fix me. And I can't just go to a psychiatrist and he can't fix me, because those pieces have to be together. But the solution comes from working the 12 steps. And that's one of the things I think that we really want to emphasize in these workshops, is that no matter how we come to step zero, whether it's through the food or the emotions or being spiritually bereft, however we come there, the solution is through these 12 steps of Overeaters Anonymous. I've been taught that I don't get to pick and choose. There were several in there that if I had been given a choice, I would not have chosen to do. You know, I had a sponsor who suggested to me that if I wanted to keep my abstinence, I needed to do the next right thing, and usually that involved a step. So I think that we have a lot of important information and literature available to us in Overeaters Anonymous. The Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, the OA 12 and 12, the Overeaters Anonymous third edition and second edition are just beautiful pieces of literature that help us see the truth about who we are. I just would encourage everyone to if you haven't read this literature, please do. It's really, I think you'll find it very useful to you in your recovery. I think what we're going to do is, at this point, I believe we're ready to start with the questions and the sharing. Lonnie and I would be happy to field any questions or listen to any sharing that you have. Probably about 5 minutes before the closing, we have a couple of questions, actually three questions, that we would like to pose to you. If you're interested in doing practicing the tool of writing and maybe doing a little journaling, that we think might help you look a little bit more into the nature of the disease, step zero, and preparing yourself to move forward into step one, which will be actually discussed next week in the workshop. I'm going to reread one more thing, and we're going to read this a second time in case new people have joined us. According to our seventh tradition, we're self-supporting through our own contributions. Please use special workshop meeting number 82278 when making your contribution. Now, several people have contacted me asking, how do you join up? How do you register for this? And one of the ways that we can make it known that people have participated in this is by making our contributions to Overeaters Anonymous. I'm sure many of you have gone to face-to-face workshops and made contributions as you go there. We would ask that you do that as well for this virtual workshop. While this workshop has no direct expenses, our seventh tradition reminds us that we are self-supporting through our own contributions. You can go to the OA website, which is oa.org, and click on contributions. It's up at the top, sort of left side of the top homepage. We really appreciate you helping us carry the message. One of the things I want to remind you as well before we open it up for sharing is that this workshop is being recorded and will be posted on the OA website podcast page, as well as other podcast feeds such as iTunes. If you speak, it's considered implied consent to have your voice and your share recorded and posted. If you wish to preserve your anonymity, you're welcome to use a fictitious name when you share. And we will open it up for questions or shares.
I'm Paula Jean. I'm very new to OA. I would like to ask, as a newcomer, where I live, it's really been a difficult process. I'm trying not to whine, but I got here on my knees in October, and I still can't find a sponsor. The first food plan person I was kind enough to help me, she is totally gone, MIA. And the woman that might be on the phone is lovely, but she doesn't have time really to do anything else but look at my food when I send it to her in the morning, and I'm finding myself really needing a sponsor. Is this a venue, what we're doing now, for that? Are there people that would sponsor and long distance or not, or how does that work on this particular?
Thank you for your question. This is a workshop format, and currently that's one of the things we maybe need to take into consideration, Paula. There'll be a meeting of the committee that's putting this on, and that's maybe one of the things that we could consider doing. For the meantime, I would like to suggest that you attend more meetings and put out a request for a sponsor. I know some of the regions have sponsors available through their website, and face-to-face meetings are often good places to find a sponsor. Do you have any suggestions, Ronnie?
I'm thinking when I got abstinent, I was in California. I then moved to Massachusetts, but I kept my California sponsor. And that was, you know, until I reestablished myself in Tucson, which was 5 years later, I kept the same sponsor in California. And we, you know, we talked through the phone. You have Skype now. And, yes, I did fly once every few months to meet with my sponsor. So I think it's, again, when we're willing, we're willing.
Thank you. Are there any other questions? Natalie. Go ahead, Natalie.
A lot of people I know get sponsors by attending the phone meeting. There's people who mm-hmm. identify as being available, so I just wanted to put that in there.
Thank you. That's a great idea. Okay, let's go ahead and let the first lady, and then you can come in next, Denise. Was there something that you wanted to share, Natalie?
I did. Thank you. I did want to share what is Step Zero to me, and thank you both for your service. I think what Step Zero means to me as I was writing is actually the whole of my life before I came into the program. Step Zero is being in the food. It's nowhere. It was my belief that I had the power to change and my unwillingness to see that I was powerless. And so to me, it's the precursor state before I came into the program. It's the state of desperation that I lived in for so long and the helplessness that I wasn't aware of and not willing to acknowledge with the food and stuff. So I appreciate us being able to look at that. It's almost like doing the inventory in step one, but without the having come to program. I really related to a lot of what you both said. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Natalie. Denise, would you like to share now?
Yes, thank you. First of all, I'd like to say thank you for having this workshop, and someone from OA texted me about it, and I immediately got on the call. I enjoyed both of your shares. So thank you for the workshop and providing a safe place for us or for me to come. And my step zero was body pain. I was diagnosed with chronic arthritis, and I'm not really sure if there's such thing as chronic arthritis. I have a normal body weight, but I also know that I am a compulsive eater and overeater, and that the things that I was eating was causing a lot of pain. I was in so much pain that when my feet touched the floor and I started to walk, the soles of my feet hurt. So it was this overall body ache, joint pain. And so if there were certain things that I needed to remove from my diet, I did. And so that was my ground zero. And what I am really holding fast to are the promises that the big book says, that I will not have a compulsion to overeat. I won't flinch when I see food. I won't try to avoid it. There will be peace. There will be serenity. And that's what I'm holding on to, that peace, that serenity, and that compulsion to overeat will be lifted from me. I know I won't be, if I go away from the program, I know I won't be cured, but that's what I'm holding on to. And I got my sponsor through attending the 9 p.m. meeting. The 9 p.m. 100 Pounders meeting, there is a section that they devote to people to volunteer to sponsor others or get people started. And I found my sponsor there who referred me to people that she was sponsoring. And I guess part of her recovery or program for her sponsees was to have them sponsor someone else. So I found my sponsor at the 100 Pounders meeting held at 9 o'clock every night, Eastern Time. Thank you for allowing me to share.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Are there any other comments or questions?
Hi, this is Linda. I'd like to share.
Thanks, Linda.
Hi, my name is Linda, and I'm in Illinois. And thank you so much, Stephanie and Ronnie. I just wanted to say that there's hope to become abstinent. I came into the rooms in 2000. I became abstinent 2002, and I've been maintaining a healthy body weight since 2010. That's a loss of 50 pounds. I came through the rooms through another 12-step program, and so I had hoped that I could get better, but I'm an insulin-dependent diabetic, and I just could not stop eating sugar. And I was angry. I hated myself. I had this, like, a hole in my heart. I tried to fill with food, and I just couldn't do it. So I went to OA. I found a sponsor right away, but it took me a while to become abstinent. I was able to put some of the food down, but I just couldn't stop eating at night. And then when morning came, I'd be hating myself all over again. But I finally, there's a phrase in the OA 12 and 12 and step 3, and it says, if you truly take the third step, you cannot fail to recover. And I kept thinking about that, and I thought, well, I need to be working the steps. That's the solution to my problem, is to work the steps. And I believe that when I finally did start working the steps, for me it was step 3 that I was, when I turned it over in step 3, I turned my food over, I was able to become abstinent. And I just want to say thanks to both of you, and I'm so glad that we're doing this workshop, and thanks to everyone else on the line, too.
Thank you.
This is Patty. I'd like to share.
Sure.
My name's Patty, and I'm a food addict. I've been maintaining a 70-pound weight loss and abstinent in OA for 17 years. And my step 0 was the mental and emotional pain. I was overweight, but it was the mental and emotional pain that kept me coming back. And I'd just like to say today that I'm feeling so blessed and so grateful for this program. I'm sitting on the beach listening to the waves. And, you know, the only reason I feel like I'm here today, I live here now, and I feel like because of the clarity I was able to maintain through working the 12 steps of OA, I listened to the guidance of my higher power and found myself in such a wonderful place. And I think had I been in the food and the depression, I would have never even followed the guidance that brought me here. And I just want to say thank you to both of you for your service and for your shares to this program, for saving my life, not only my physical life, but my life, you know, my spiritual and emotional life. So thank you.
Thank you.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Hi, my name is Jean. I'm a compulsive overeater and food addict from Rhode Island. I dialed in late to the meeting, and I was just wondering, as you do the workshop once a month, is there a certain format you're following? Is there a certain literature that you're going to be following? I don't know if I missed that from the beginning, so if you could just tell me.
We are going to do, starting next week, we're going to do a step a month on the second Sunday of each month.
Mm-hmm.
It's different speakers, and so at the beginning of the workshop, the speakers will say what literature they're using for that specific session. Today
mm-hmm.
we use the third edition of the Storybook for OA and the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous.
Very good. And then you open it up for sharing as you're doing today?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, great.
Yeah.
Thank you very much, and thank you so much for your service. It's definitely needed. I appreciate this. Thank you.
My pleasure. Thank you. As Stephanie said earlier, we're going to leave you with a couple of questions. You can feel free to write them now, meditate on them, talk to your sponsor about them. You can also contact Stephanie and myself. I'll give you our emails in just a minute. But one of the questions that we were thinking about is, what are the reservations that cause me to resist recovery? That's the first question. The second question is, what resources are available to me on the OA website? I know that every time I go on the website, you know, when I have some time to kill, I'm waiting in line, I have my phone with me now, I just go to the OA website and I always, always discover something new, which I like. A couple more questions is, am I willing to open my heart to a sponsor, to another person, no matter what? Am I willing to do that? The last question is what I'm doing still working? Is it still working? Is it working for me? And last thing I'm going to give you is our emails if you want to write down. And again, this recording is going to be online in a couple of weeks on the OA website. Stephanie's email is V as in Victor, S as in, well, sugar, ironically, T as in trustee, the digit 4, OA, at hotmail.com. So it's the initial for virtual service trustee, 4, OA, at hotmail.com. My email is oaronnie, it's O-A-R-O-N-I, at outlook.com. And if you will please help me end this session with a serenity prayer, I'll be very grateful.
Excuse me, Ronnie?
Yeah.
And for you to repeat the questions real quickly.
The first question, hold on. What are my reservations about working the steps? What are my reservations about working the steps? Am I willing, it's not in the same order that I read them, am I willing to open my heart to a sponsor no matter what? What resources do I have on the OA website? And I believe the first one was similar to the reservation. It was, what reservations do I have about my recovery? I just wanted to remind you that, again, we're both servants in OA, and that the opinion expressed here are those of us as individual OA members, and they do not represent OA as a whole. If you can please help me close with a serenity prayer. God, grant me serenity to accept the things I cannot change, courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. Thank you very much. God bless.